You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
This is Kick-Ass News. I'm Ben Mathis. Folks, do you enjoy listening to Kick-Ass News? Well, then become a part of what I'm doing here and help support the show by going to patreon.com/kickassnews and making a donation. Your encouragement and support is always appreciated. And now, enjoy the podcast. You've heard it from Donald Trump.
They can't get jobs because there are no jobs, because China has our jobs and Mexico has our jobs. They all have our jobs.
You've heard it from his supporters.
We want jobs now!
You've even heard it from South Park.
They took my job!
They took your job!
They took our job!
They took our jobs!
Those foreigners are taking our jobs. Whether it's illegal immigrants or outsourcing, or as Donald Trump puts it, losing at trade, someone from somewhere else is taking all of our jobs. But let me ask you this. What are you going to do when the person taking your job isn't a person at all? We're seeing more leaps in robotics in the past 5 years than we've seen in the past 50. And for corporations and even small businesses, the prospect of a wageless, healthcareless, non-complaining, non-unionized employee who works 24 hours a day and 365 days a year is pretty hard to pass up. But my guest today says that unlike previous industrial revolutions, the robotic age may destroy more jobs than it creates, and it might require the world to radically rethink how we look at labor, the economy, and the value of work. Martin Ford is the prominent futurist and leading expert on artificial intelligence and robotics and their potential impact on the job market, economy, and society. He has over 25 years' experience in the fields of computer design and software development, and he's the founder of a Silicon Valley-based software development firm. He's written numerous articles about future technology and their implications for publications like the New York Times, Fortune, Forbes, The Atlantic, The Washington Post, Harvard Business Review, and The Financial Times. He's also a New York Times best-selling author of The Lights in the Tunnel, Automation, Accelerating Technology, and the Economy of the Future. His newest book, Rise of the Robots, Technology and the Threat of a Jobless Future, warns that rapid advances in robotics and artificial intelligence are going to fundamentally disrupt the world economy, and your job might be a lot more replaceable than you think. Today, we'll talk about which jobs are most susceptible to AI and robotics, and why it's not going to be limited to just low-skilled manufacturing jobs. We'll talk about the ways it could fundamentally change society, possibly leading to mass unemployment, unrest, and the necessity for a huge expansion of the government social safety net. We'll also talk about what career paths and skills young people can pursue to ensure job security in the age of robots. Coming up with Martin Ford in just a moment. Today I'm joined by Martin Ford. He's the author of Rise of the Robots, Technology and the Threat of a Jobless Future. Martin, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Industry and tech have gone through transformative periods, and we've always found a way to adjust. Buggy drivers were replaced by assembly line workers. Taxi drivers are now switching over to become Uber drivers. But you and a number of others say that the age of robots isn't going to be like previous disruptive industries. Why is this different?
That's right. As you say, historically, you know, we've always had an economy that's adjusted and it has created more jobs. The example you gave is a good one. You know, the manufacturers of horse-drawn carriages were wiped out, and then there was a rising automotive industry. And that industry created enormous numbers of jobs for average people. And I think that it worked that way just because we were at a particular time in history when technology was at that point where, you know, that process was very labor-intensive. I think that that has pretty much come to an end. And if you look at the new industries being created today, they don't look anything like the automotive industry. Look at Google, look at Facebook. You know, it's not creating huge numbers of jobs in any sense, and it's certainly not creating a lot of jobs and opportunities for average, typical people in the way that the automotive industry did. So I do think we're seeing a big shift, and the thing that's really driving it is that machines, computers, in a limited way, are now beginning to think. You know, they're taking on cognitive capability. It's not just about mechanical processes or muscle power. It's now about brain power. And this is something that's really entirely new, and it's much broader than it has been in the past. You can point to examples like computers that did computation in the past, but now we've got machines that are truly beginning to think in a broader sense. And, you know, that's really quite disruptive. And I think that where it leads to is that we're going to get to the point where nearly all of the routine, repetitive, predictable work in the economy is going to be automated. And that's going to have just an enormous impact on the number of jobs and the type of jobs that are available.
Let's talk about what kind of jobs could be replaced. For the longest time, we thought that the jobs that were under threat by machines and computers were largely manufacturing jobs. And the line was, well, better jobs will come of that. But you say in the book that some of those better paying jobs are the ones that are most threatened under this. Which people should be worrying about their job security in the next few years?
Again, I think that the main criterion for whether or not a job is going to be threatened, you know, for the foreseeable future, thinking of the next decade or two, is that job on some level predictable? Are you doing something that another person, if they studied a record of everything you've done in the past, could that person figure out how to do your job eventually? If the answer is yes, then eventually I think there'll be a smart algorithm or a robot that will come along and be able to do that job. And the thing is that when you think in that way, it's clear that that encompasses a lot of skilled, knowledge-based jobs. I mean, there are a lot of people that sit in front of a computer and they crank out the same kind of analysis again and again. They write the same basic report again and again. All of that is susceptible to this. And in many cases, we can point to examples where it's already happening. It's already being, you know, these types of jobs are already being automated by smart software. And one of the paradoxes of all of this is that people, you know, continue to assume that, you know, it's really lower skill, uneducated people that are going to be impacted by this. But the reality is that a knowledge-based job where you're just manipulating information is often easier to automate because you only need software to do that.
Right, whereas, you don't need the mechanical
element. That's right. Whereas the you know, a lot of lower-wage jobs actually require lots of visual perception and dexterity where you're actually manipulating the environment. And much of that is actually very hard to automate still. You know, to build a robot that can match a person's fine motor skills and dexterity and hand-eye coordination and so forth is still a substantial challenge. So, you know, a lot of more educated people that have done everything they're supposed to do and gone and gotten that college degree, they're going to find that what they're doing is really quite susceptible to this. So that's a real issue for us.
What specific jobs do you picture being under threat eventually?
Well, we already see, for example, entry levels in journalism to some extent being impacted. There are smart systems out there that can tap into data and they can analyze that data, figure out what's interesting or compelling about that data, and then write a news story. And you can read those stories, and it's not obvious that it was written by a machine as opposed to a person. And that's surprising,
because you would think that journalism, creative writing, would be one of the least replaceable things.
That's right. And, again, right now we're at the infancy. and if you look at what's being done, is more routine things, sports reporting, financial reporting. But the key insight is it's going to get better and better. It's not going to stay at that early stage. It's going to progress rapidly. Yeah. And I think ultimately that kind of approach is going to scale across all kinds of white collar jobs. I mean, people sitting in a cubicle somewhere in an office tower doing something that is fairly routine and repetitive, all of that is going to be impacted by this. So, you can't really point to any one particular industry or particular type of jobs. It's really a holistic thing that's just going to impact everywhere. And that's what makes this disruptive. If it were just one area, then you'd say, well, do something different. But if it's coming for everything, then of course, that's a whole different problem.
Healthcare
is, I would say, in general, one of the areas that is relatively safe for workers for the foreseeable future. And the reason is that a lot of jobs in healthcare require a combination of mobility and dexterity and direct interaction on a human level with patients. A good example of that is a nurse. Mm-hmm. A nurse is running around all the time, interacting with people, doing all kinds of things that require lots of visual perception and fine motor skill and so forth. Building a robot that could do that is still science fiction. So, being a nurse is relatively safe.
But pharmaceuticals, not so much. What I've heard, that's one of the
certainly. Pharmacists, the people that prepare medications, are very highly susceptible to automation, and there are lots of robots already. Big robots in hospitals, and small robots that are deployed in retail environments. So, to some extent, pharmacists are being saved right now, mostly because of regulation. The fact that there are laws there to say they have to be there. If we didn't have that, I think we'd see a lot fewer pharmacy jobs already. Some doctors are definitely going to be susceptible to automation. A good example would be a radiologist, someone that just analyzes medical images. That's something that computers are rapidly getting extraordinarily good at. So I think that job is probably going to disappear at some point in the future. On the other hand, doctors that, like nurses that have more direct interaction with patients and a requirement for more dexterity and so forth, those jobs are going to be safer. Definitely within healthcare, there are a lot of jobs there that are relatively safe. And that the paradox of that is that to some extent is a problem because, healthcare is becoming such a burden on our economy. So it would actually be a great thing if we could bring in more technology to lower the cost of that.
But more efficient.
The problem is that it's not necessarily so easy in a lot of areas. Although I do absolutely think that all of this technology is going to have a big impact in healthcare, and it certainly will lead to some extraordinarily advances. You look at what can be done in terms of diagnosis, what IBM's doing with its Watson technology. I mean, that's going to be an incredibly powerful tool, which I think will lead to better diagnosis and treatment and better quality across the board. It's one of the things that's going to happen is that you'll take the expertise of the very best doctors and you will make that available to doctors everywhere so that you should see a general increase in the level of quality at the healthcare. So I think it's a very positive trend, but there are definitely a lot of challenges in healthcare specifically.
Yeah, and I was also surprised to learn that one of the careers that's most susceptible to automation is the legal profession, lawyers, paralegals. But when I thought about it, it makes sense because it's not unthinkable that you could come up with an algorithm to just plug in those things when you're talking about writing contracts.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is most lawyers don't work in courtrooms, right? They're stuck in offices or they're doing legal research, and a lot of this is going to be susceptible. The one area where we see the impact already right now is in what's called discovery. That's the process where you've got to figure out what documents and information needs to be provided to the other side in a legal court case. And it used to be a process of lawyers and paralegals going through cardboard boxes full of papers and looking at each one. Now a lot of that has been automated with e-discovery software. And so that's just one example where a lot of the more routine, repetitive work that is done by highly skilled people is you know, already being automated. And you're going to see, you know, something similar in many other areas in terms of legal research, writing briefs, you know, making legal predictions and decisions. A lot of that is also susceptible to this. So, you know, a lot of the, you know, we're still going to have the superstar lawyer in the courtroom and all of that. That job is probably safe.
No robots in the courtroom.
But all of the people that support that person, you know, doing the work in the library and cranking out contracts and briefs and stuff, a lot of that is definitely going to be impacted.
I don't know. I kind of think that it might be fun to have a robot Matlock, you know, show up in the courtroom in a seersucker suit.
Well, you can never say never. I think we're you know, some distance away from that, but certainly that's possible.
What kind of time horizon are we looking at for robotics to become relatively pervasive? In other words, how long do we have to look for a new job?
Well, I tend to think in terms of a 10 to 20 year time frame, in terms of this really becoming unambiguous and obvious and potentially disruptive. But really, that's a guess. And in many ways, I think it's a fairly conservative guess. I think that I have certainly talked to people that are involved in these technologies, and particularly not so much robotics, but machine learning, you know, the advances we're seeing in artificial intelligence, where these algorithms are getting better and better at learning. If you talk to some of the people involved in those technologies, they're thinking it could be more in the 5 to 10 year time horizon. So it's entirely possible that all of this could happen long before we expect it, and certainly long before we are in any way prepared for it.
Where do labor unions fit in? I have to imagine that they wouldn't be too excited about robotics.
Well, I mean, I think they realize that it's inevitable. And you know, the problem with labor unions, of course, is that we pretty much wipe them out in the private sector. So at one time, labor unions were a powerful force that helped out the whole middle class, really, that gave workers more bargaining power. And that's kind of disappeared. And I think that labor unions, it's unclear if they're going to play a role in the future. And the problem is, of course, that they are only able to really speak for a small minority of workers, at least in the private sector now. And if they succeed in raising wages for those workers, then it naturally makes those jobs more, you know, it makes the idea of automating those jobs more attractive. So it can actually push this this whole process even along a bit further. So the question is whether there's a role for labor unions in maybe finding a way to represent everyone, not just the people that are actually in their unions and work in the jobs that are covered by their union, but is there some mechanism where they can begin to be a voice for the entire middle class, for example? And I do think that there's a missing need there. We need someone to speak for the middle class, you know, to really advocate for what's happening here. I don't know if labor unions are going to be the solution to that, or if maybe there's something else that will step into that gap. But we definitely do need someone to begin speaking out for the interests of average people.
We're going to take a quick break right now, and then I'll be back to talk more with Martin Ford. Back in just a moment. If you're intrigued by my conversation with Martin Ford, then check out his book, Rise of the Robots: Technology and the Threat of a Jobless Future. And right now, you can download the audio version of his book for free with a special promotion just for our listeners from audible.com. Just go to audibletrial.com/kickassnews for a free 30-day trial and a free audiobook download, which can be Rise of the Robots by my guest today, Martin Ford, or any of Audible's 180,000 titles. That's audibletrial.com/kickassnews. Or click on the sponsor link on our webpage to download the free audiobook of your choice. And now, back to the show.
Yeah, and we've seen a lot of anti-immigrant sentiment right now and rage at foreign manufacturing, particularly in the 2016 election. Who are people going to have to be angry at when they're replaced by a machine or a computer?
Well, you know, that's the thing. And the thing is that that's
who
already
do they
happening.
Direct their anger
I believe that it's already happening. I think that if you look at what is really causing the plight of working class and middle class people in this country. Technology is probably a bigger factor than immigration or even trade. And I think that as we look forward, that will be even more true. For a while there, China did have a big impact, but there's lots of evidence to suggest that that's kind of winding down now, that the impact of China is not going to be as great in the future, but the impact of technology is going to be even more dramatic. So I think that, you know, it's a lot when people are angry, of course, you look for someone to blame. It's a lot easier to blame another person, whether that person is a worker in China or an immigrant. Technology is, you know, a lot less visible and tangible. It's something that you can't so much point to. And so, you know, that's part of what's going on is that I think people don't realize what it is that's really causing the trouble for them. And so there's this generalized anger out there. And I worry a lot that that's going to get worse. I mean, you know, the trend that I see suggests that if we don't find a way to adapt to this, you know, things are going to get a lot worse. The level of anger is going to get worse, and therefore opportunities for people like Donald Trump to step into that situation and take advantage of it are also going to grow. So, you know, and that'll be true both here and in Europe.
Are we looking at large-scale unemployment, societal unrest, maybe even riots? I mean,
that's a possibility at some point. There's a range of possible outcomes here. Certainly, mass unemployment is one possibility, especially if this unfolds at a rate that is maybe faster than what we're ready for. And if we're totally unprepared, you can't rule out that possibility. A less extreme possibility is that we just see a continuation of what we see now, which is that average people have got stagnant wages. Average people are often underemployed, where they do have a job, but they don't get enough hours, or the job that they can find doesn't really utilize their skills and so forth. So we could see that worsen. That would be a sort of a tamer version of this. So, however it works out, it's not going to be good in terms of the impact on society and in terms of the political response that you're going to see. So I do think that we're going to see people more and more disenfranchised, people more and more angry, and that can lead to all kinds of bad things.
Well, this is a pretty pessimistic picture you're painting here. Are there opportunities to adjust and thrive in the era of robots?
Sure. I mean, I think that's the reason I'm talking about this. That's the reason I wrote my book, is that there absolutely is a fantastic opportunity there. I mean, where I live in Silicon Valley, there are a lot of what we call techno-optimists, people that have a very bubbly, optimistic view on this and think that technology is always great. And, you know, to a large extent, I agree with that. Technology is the thing that has made us more wealthy. I mean, if you compare the lifestyle of an average person today to the lifestyle of a very, very wealthy person maybe 100 years ago, I think the average person in most ways is probably better off today. And the reason is that technology has made our world better and created all of this abundance of new services and products for us. I think we want that to continue, but we need to recognize that we're headed into a different era. And in particular, there's going to be a big impact on the distribution of income. If we can adapt to that, you can imagine a very utopian future, something like on Star Trek, where no one really has to work if they don't want to, or certainly they don't have to do an unpleasant job or a job that they hate, and yet everyone is thriving. That's possible. That can happen. The problem is I don't think that happens automatically as a result of the progress of capitalism. I think that we're going to have to actually adopt policies to push us in that direction.
Will it entail having to rethink the fundamentals of our economy?
To some extent, I think it's going to require ultimately an unconventional, seemingly radical adaptation. I don't think that we can, you know, the conventional ideas that are out there are things like give people more education and training.
Right, we hear that a lot.
And that has worked so far, but we're getting to the point where I just don't think that that's going to be a sustainable solution. And a big part of the reason is that we now have machines climbing the skills ladder. So people are not going to be able to stay ahead of that. You know, yeah. I mean, it could, if you think in the extreme, it'll get to the point where if you want a job, you got to have a PhD from MIT in artificial intelligence or something so you can be a developer. I mean, we're not going to take all the taxi drivers and put them into that kind of role, right? Yeah. So it's not, ultimately, it's not sustainable.
But still, someone has to make the robots, right?
Yeah, though there definitely will be opportunities.
Or will robots be making the robots?
Well, eventually, robots will definitely be building the robots, but there's still going to be roles for people in many ways. My concern is that, number one, there won't be enough of those opportunities for everyone. And number two, there'll be a mismatch between the skills that are required in those new jobs and the skills and capabilities of typical people out there. Yeah. So ultimately, I do think we're going to have to do something about that. And what I've advocated, and it's an idea that's getting more traction, is that someday, not tomorrow, but someday, we're going to have to look at something like a guaranteed basic income where everyone has got some sort of a floor on their income so that they can survive economically, whether they have access to a traditional job or not. And again, that's a very radical idea that people will call socialism. Actually, it's not. If you look historically, what you'll find is that many conservatives and libertarians have supported that idea, in particular Friedrich Hayek, who has become kind of a conservative icon. He was a big proponent of a guaranteed minimum income. So
it's not a very hopeful picture, though, if we're talking about having to put Americans on the dole.
Well, you see, that's in our society as it exists today, we've got that value proposition, which says that, you know, you got to work, you got to do something productive, or you're a loser. I think over time we're going to evolve away from that. I think that if we gave everyone a minimal income, a floor, most people, the vast majority of people, would still want to do something productive on top of that, all right? And in fact, there's evidence to suggest that if you give people a basic safety net, they may, in many cases, choose to take more risk. I mean, so just for example, suppose you've got a job right now that you're not really growing in. It's just kind of a boring job. You keep it. If you knew that if you left that job, your income would be subject to a floor, it wouldn't just drop to zero. There would be a safety net for you there. You might be more willing to quit that job and do something more innovative, right? Take a riskier job in a startup company, or maybe even start your own business.
And
so as long as, you know, we're not talking about a guaranteed income that's so generous that everyone just becomes a slacker, can become a very effective, way to make things work better.
And what will be the key components to individual Americans' ability to adjust and hopefully thrive in this new reality?
Well, there are a couple of challenges here. I do think that the first challenge we're going to face, and the biggest political challenge, is going to be income distribution. I mean, where are people going to get their income from if they don't have a job? And that's the first part of it. We're going to have to figure out what to do about that. Assuming we figure that out and maybe it leads to something like a guaranteed income, then the sort of more intangible question is, how do people find value? I mean, right now, our jobs provide two things, basically, right? We get an income, which is important, and we also get that sense of accomplishment, the sense that we're doing something worthwhile. And from, our careers and our jobs have become really important to our sense of self-worth and accomplishment. In the future, people will still for sure need both of those things. They'll need the income and they'll need that sense that they are doing something worthwhile. Our challenge is going to be to figure out a way to make sure that happens. And I think it will involve effectively decoupling those two things so that you'll still get both of those really important things, but you may not get them from the same place. They may not be in one package the way a job is today.
But for, say, a kid in high school who's thinking of going to college in the next few years, if they want to be able to earn a living and do well in the age of robots, what advice would you give to them?
Well, specifically, if you're looking for an area to study, as I said, I think healthcare is a pretty good bet because those, it's going to be subject to less automation.
Nurses have pretty good job security, you said.
Yeah, I think that's true. And also, we've got demographics going on in terms of our aging population, which suggests there's going to be a need for more healthcare in the future. That's not a bad bet, but more generally than that, you want to focus on things that are more creative and non-routine. I mean, the last thing you want to do in any area is go to school and study and acquire a bunch of skills that allow you to do some relatively routine, predictable job. And a lot of our education is about that, because if that's the path you take, then you're making a big investment in learning something that is very likely going to disappear at some point in the future. So you want I mean, there is an argument for being, I think, fairly broad-based. I mean, you know, maybe study liberal arts as opposed to something really incredibly specific, because you want that breadth. You want that ability to be flexible, to move on to different areas. And really the thing you want to emphasize is this ability to think creatively. So mm-hmm. I would say don't get too specific. I mean, in general, studying science and technology is good, because that, of course, that allows you an opportunity to participate in all of this. But still, you want that ability to move to other areas, because we know that things are going to move very fast in the future. A lot of existing opportunities are going to just disappear.
I talked to Guru Banavar, the head of the Watson Project at IBM. He says we don't have to worry too much about superintelligence and singularity. Does that concern you at all? And do you think that that might be the main line of attack for what would, I assume, inevitably be some type of a public relations campaign against robotics by the unions or whatever vested interests?
I would tend to agree that we don't need to worry about it anytime soon. I mean, what I found is that if you talk to people like Guru that have a lot of expertise in artificial intelligence or really work in this area, they're not too worried about that. The people that have spoken out, warning us that super intelligence is going to be an existential threat, the machines are going to take over. There've been people like Stephen Hawking and Elon Musk, very smart right. people, very prominent individuals, but not doing actual research in artificial intelligence, right? Yeah. So I think if you talk to the people actually working in AI, they tend to be a bit more humble. Having said that, you know, I don't think it's a silly concern. It's not ridiculous. It shouldn't be, it's not something we should laugh at. Someday it may be an incredibly important issue. I mean, obviously, if you talk to people working in artificial intelligence, they do believe that eventually we will build a machine that can think like a person. And if that happens, that's going to be incredibly disruptive. I mean, as Stephen Hawking said, that will be the biggest thing in human history, and I think that's not wrong. At that point, there is a whole can of worms there that opens up. So it's not, Elon Musk, for example, has donated a lot of money to set up think tanks that are thinking about this issue, and I don't think that's a bad thing. I mean, it's something that we should be giving some thought to. I don't think that it's a major issue for society that we should be dumping all kinds of resources, you know, as a society worrying about that. But certainly if Elon wants to set up think tanks to engage in that, I think that that's a positive thing, because someday, it might be 30, 50, 100 years from now, maybe that is going to be an existential issue.
Well, one job that I think many people are excited to replace with robots is boots on the ground, soldiers. But then on the other side of that, there are many people who are concerned about this idea of autonomous weapons, which take the drone a few steps further, weapons that can think and, in theory, kill for themselves. Where do you fall on autonomous weapons?
Well, I mean, there's no doubt. I mean, if you talk to the military, that the use of robotics and drones has been a positive thing. I mean, it's saved the lives of many, many U.S. soldiers and pilots and all the rest of it. So, I mean, there's no doubt that from our national security perspective, this is a positive development. As you say, the debate that's happening right now is, should we go beyond having people control those machines and allow those machines to become autonomous? And that's something that many people find very, very disturbing. There is certainly a movement to ban that kind of technology in the same way that, for example, chemical weapons are banned. I think it's that it's a debate that we need to have. I also think that, you know, to some extent, it's probably inevitable that we're going to get to the point where weapons are going to become more autonomous. And the reason is that someone will do it. The U.S. military may not take that first step, but I've certainly heard reports that the Russians are actively working on that. Mm-hmm. I suspect that it will happen. And the problem is that on the battlefield, things are going to unfold at such a rapid rate that an autonomous robot is going to have a tremendous advantage. I mean, people are not going to be able to think fast enough to deal with the kind of dynamic situations that unfold. And if you want a preview of that, you can look to Wall Street, where you've got trading algorithms that are essentially battling each other. And they're doing it in tiny fractions of a second, that, you know, way beyond what any person could understand or deal with. So I suspect the same thing is ultimately going to happen on the battlefield, and it's probably inevitable, although it certainly is on many levels disturbing.
Well, before we go, I have to ask, do you think that you have job security in the age of robots, or do you think a computer might be writing Rise of the Robots 2 for you?
Well, I would give the same answer that I think applies to everyone, which is that for the foreseeable future, I think I'm okay there if I'm writing books and doing that kind of thing. But you can never say never. I mean, there's no job anywhere that I would say is absolutely safe forever. Ultimately, you know, we just talked about the possibility of machines that can think like people. If that happens, then that's all she wrote. I mean, there are no jobs that are safe at that point. So, you know, that's something for us all to keep in mind going forward, I think.
Well, Martin Ford, your book is called Rise of the Robots, Technology and the Threat of a Jobless Future. Martin Ford, thanks for sitting down with me.
Thanks a lot for having me. It's great to be here.
Thanks again to Martin Ford for coming on the show. And if you liked today's episode, I would highly recommend his book, Rise of the Robots, Technology and the Threat of a Jobless Future. I'll include an Amazon link where you can order it in the show notes for this episode and on our website at kickassnewspodcast.com. Or if you'd prefer to listen to the audio version, you can download that for free through that special trial offer just for our listeners at audibletrial.com/kickassnews. You can follow him on Twitter at mfordfuture, or keep up with him on his blog at econfuture.wordpress.com. Be sure to subscribe to Kickass News on iTunes and leave us a review while you're there. You can visit Kickass News on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at KA Politics, and please be sure to recommend Kickass News to your friends on your social media. And if you really want to help out, then donate to our GoFundMe campaign at gofundme.com/kickassnews, or make a recurring donation at patreon.com/kickassnews. And as always, I welcome your comments, questions, and suggestions at comments@kickassnewspodcast.com. For now, though, I'm Ben Mathis, and thanks for listening to Kick-Ass News. Kick-Ass News is a trademark of Mathis Entertainment, Inc.